trying to figure
out. Are you nervous?
I don't know. Because
I'm sitting here in front of you?
Yeah. I love your podcast voice. Have you been rehearsing? Have you been getting ready for this episode? You know, we were supposed to record this yesterday.
Yeah, I was practicing my vocals earlier, doing all my, you know, me, 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 me.
So I first met this guest 5.5 years ago, Dan, my husband. Welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh.
My first ever podcast.
First ever podcast.
First ever.
You've never done any podcast in your whole life.
Never one.
And you want the first one to be me? Are you sure? The Are you scared? Is... Are you ready to talk a lot of shit?
I'm not gonna talk any shit. Get into the all first of our... it's a pleasure that this is my first podcast.
I love
yes,
your
my
podcast.
First podcast. It had to be a podcast.
So where should we start? You were 31. I was 23. So we're 8 years apart. I'm now 28. And he is 36. We both have birthdays in April. So I'm April 13th. I'm in Aries. He's April, not that anyone asked. I'm just going to tell you anyway. He's April 28th and he's a Taurus. So those are our signs for people who know about all of that stuff.
I'm surprised that's you've been doing this for 4 years.
Yeah. And
this is my first time.
This is the first interview. I actually asked him before recording. He's never been on any podcast. This is my first time interviewing him, and it's actually round two because we did record this podcast last weekend and it went a lot longer, and I did answer all the questions that you asked, but we are going to be celebrating our first wedding anniversary next week. So when you're listening to this episode, it'll be out on our actual anniversary. So to give you guys some background, I met Dan first on August 11th of 2018. And this was before I launched the podcast, before I even wrote or published my book or started speaking publicly on my story. And he was one of the first people that I told about my bipolar diagnosis besides my family and a couple friends here and there. No one else really knew about anything like this. So I wanted to get into just the whole evolution of our relationship, how we first met, answer all the questions that you guys have asked, and really just kick things off with your first impression of me on that day back in August.
So we met at a a day club pool party place. It's in kind of North Scottsdale, so it's not like the old town, like clubby vibe. It was definitely a lot more low key. I think my friend group was
Jackie's birthday.
Almost the only, yeah, it was her birthday. My friend group was like the only people there other than you and your friend. I actually didn't approach Paris. Her friend approached me and hollered at me from across the bar and told me to come talk to her hot best friend. Oh, so, of course I knew who she was talking about, and she was beautiful. So I had to go talk to her.
Well, okay. That was because also, yes. So it was called BLK Live. So if anyone here is listening and you live in Arizona, you can Google BLK Live. They shut down and they are now a restaurant in Scottsdale, but that's where I was. So I actually didn't want to go because my friend was trying to get me to go to this day club place because we knew the owner of it who was working. And she's like, we can go, we can get free drinks, hang out at the pool. And I just was like, I don't want to drink or do any of this, but I ended up going anyway. Dan almost didn't end up going as well. Cause weren't you at the gym or something? And then I don't remember.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if I was going to go or not, but I ended up going right after I left the gym.
And then to answer a question. So someone asked, you guys asked a lot of questions and I want to make sure we're answering those. So what attracted you to me in the first place? When you first saw me, first heard me talk?
Well, you were a little standoffish at first, to be honest with you. I couldn't quite get a read on whether or not you really wanted to be talking to me or not, but I thought you were hot. I thought you were beautiful. And so I kept trying, right? We ended up leaving and going to Cheesecake Factory. with your friend, and you guys were a little weird, I think.
A little weird. That we would talk about the stupidest.
That would be my first impression, is that you were a little weird.
But I do remember that now. I definitely was standoffish, and the reason for that is because this person that I was with, every time I would go anywhere with her, she would always do this, where she would yell at guys, talk to guys, and it was always drinking, always partying. And it would always be that line of, come meet my hot best friend. And I hated when she would do that, because I would be like, I just wanted to hang out with you and spend time with you. And now you're always bringing guys over. And it would happen so much that I remember when she brought Dan over, and I remember we were talking, and then I was like, hey, do you have some sunscreen? And we were going to your cabana area, and she was just like right behind us. And I was like, what did I say to her? I was like, you're such a
well, yeah, dog. Well, that's the thing. You do definitely have a personality, because she came walking over and you just looked at me and just said, oh, cock block, and then like walked away. And I was like, what was that?
To Brooke. Yeah.
Yeah. It was about Brooke.
Yeah. So, well, it was funny because you also said the way that you first saw me. So I don't get this right. So apparently they had their little section, and this place was dead. This place was so dead. And I was like, oh, I can put my stuff down. And apparently that was your chairs.
We moved those chairs to that spot right next to the pool. And then you walked over and just took them.
And I put my stuff down. And then I think, wasn't it like Jenna or Jackie or some of the girls were like, who's this girl who just put all her shit down?
Yeah.
And sat down, because I remember she yelled at you across the bar, and mm-hmm. it was like, oh, are you getting a drink for yourself or for a girl or what? And you were like, I'm single, I'm getting a drink for me. And then she was like, yep, you should get out there and meet someone, or actually come meet my hot best friend. And I remember we came over and you were talking, and then it was funny because you told me later, you were like, I was actually kind of getting annoyed because the group of friends, there was like some of the guys there were talking to me, and you're like, I'm not going to let him talk to me, right?
I wasn't getting annoyed, but yeah, there was another guy in our group that was chatting with you, and I was like, oh, he can't move in on my
on your
on
what
my, on my girl here that
your
I'm
girl that's
trying to wheel
your, that's not even your girl you're trying to wheel. Yeah. And didn't you say you thought I was Spanish or Mexican, or
you were really tan at the time other... So yeah, I thought you were Mexican.
And then I think the other thing that was funny, so when I first met you, I thought you were really quiet, and yeah, I was like, he seems typical. Really nice. He's really quiet, and you were beautiful. Thanks. To me. I thought you were so quiet.
I am a much more reserved personality, especially until you get to know me.
I'm not.
I tend to be more quiet.
I feel like
you were.
I was
being that way a little bit, but yeah, you're more outgoing than I am.
And then, so that was the first day we met. So that was August 11th of 2018, a Saturday. And then after that, we all ended up leaving the pool. And then we went to Cheesecake Factory, which was our favorite place.
We went there quite a bit.
We would go there all the time. And I thought it was the best place ever. And I remember we went there, and then we went to Dave and Buster's, which is a...
Which also became a staple of our dating.
What, Dave and Buster's?
We went there quite a bit. Yeah, we still go there.
So we haven't been there in a long time. A while. But I love Dave and Buster's, and I still have the lava lamp that we won from the games, and it's in our bathroom, and I just turned it off today because I leave it on sometimes. But that makes me remember, I want to ask you your impression of this. So in your mind, when you think back to our early days of dating, how did your first initial impression of me when we first met that first day, did it change at all in our early days? Because I think I remember you saying what you kind of thought of me, but I'll let you answer that.
Well, yeah. So, it did develop over time. I would use the kind of cliche of like peeling back an onion peel, because that essentially was, the case in our relationship. You were definitely very guarded and standoffish, at first. And it was almost like, you'd also talk really quickly and change topics really quickly. So it was almost like you were getting, you know, an inch deep and a mile wide, and not actually, you know, getting below the surface.
So why did you keep dating me?
Well, when we would go out, there would be a little bit of that onion that would peel back, especially as I got to know you more and
peel
more.
Peel back the onion. Yeah, I love that metaphor.
I kept peeling it back, and then it revealed a beautiful person. So, but it really wasn't until you told me that you were living with bipolar that I think that that's where I finally got to actually see the center of the onion or the armor kind of come off. That was when things to me changed quite a bit.
So when we were first dating, I honestly didn't think you liked me because you would like plan dinners and stuff. And I'd be like, oh, like last minute, I couldn't go or something. And I actually got out of a really bad relationship prior to that. And every single one before that was really bad. So I was like, I just want to be alone. I don't want to date anyone. I don't want to do this because I thought that you were such a nice person that I really didn't feel worthy or deserving of that, because prior to meeting you, every relationship I've been in, I thought that I had to earn love. And that, again, talking about bipolar was a reason that caused a lot of issues. So I remember something else I thought was so weird, because I feel like in all my other relationships, I was used to being treated so bad and treated poorly and not really respected in relationships. And I kind of lost that value for myself. So honestly, in the beginning of us dating, I really didn't think you liked me, because I remember you didn't even kiss me until like the third date. Do you remember that?
Yeah. But so that's like, for me, that's kind of normal. That's just kind of been my dating MO. I don't tend to kiss on the first date or do things on the first date. I don't know. I'm a bit more reserved, I guess. But yeah, and I remember that you started laughing at me when I kissed you.
Well, yeah, because I was like, what the heck? I just kept thinking that I'm like, I obviously feel like he thinks I'm too much or weird or something. And I was laughing because I remember I was like nervous or something. I don't know. And then I remember after that, I don't remember the exact moment that we became official, like boyfriend, girlfriend. So we say it's Halloween, because I remember we went to a Halloween party together as boyfriend and girlfriend. Yeah. But I remember when you kissed me, I was just like, oh my God, I just remember you being so different than everyone else, because you actually wanted to get to know me, my passions, my interests, what I'm wanting to build with my future and my life. And every other relationship it was so surface level and more about how I look or, you know, not really wanting to get to know me. So I remember when we had that date, and I remember you like drove me home, because this goes into our living situation first. So we became official Halloween is what we say. I was still living at home with my parents because I just graduated from college. And then I moved into my own apartment. I think it was a couple months later. And then you were living with friends.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I helped you move.
Yeah, you helped me move into my place. But I remember instantly just feeling, because I usually don't feel connected with a lot of people. And I feel like I've gone through a phase of just not feeling emotions or love or any of that for anyone, just because I was so used to guarding myself. And I think a big reason for that was the bipolar diagnosis and sharing that with people and having it not end well. So I remember when I finally told you about that, which was going back to when you said I was guarded, I was very surface level, I wouldn't really let share too many details with you about my past or anything. And I remember we were literally on a date at the sushi restaurant and I started crying.
Well, I don't know if we were on a date though. That was the thing. It was, and I think this just kind of goes back to that you were very guarded. And so things to me weren't really going that great at that point. And I honestly think that if you wouldn't have opened up to me, we probably wouldn't have made it past that point.
But, so that was an unplanned date, or how did that happen?
Yeah, because I think we had a little bit of an argument or something at that time. And so I had picked you up to just talk to you. And I don't remember how it kind of came about, but you just started crying and telling me, you know, about your experiences and all of these kind of tougher topics, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, finally, this girl is actually giving me something of substance here. And so I thought that moment, and looking back, I really do think that that moment was kind of a turning point in our relationship, to where it actually started to blossom from there.
Well, I remember I went into that conversation because I was like, okay, I'm going to tell him everything. And then he's never going to want to talk to me again. And I was actually happy about that, because I feel like I, again, thought you were too good of a person and I wanted you to walk away from me rather than me hurting you and keeping this relationship. I wanted you to see something in me like that and just leave. And I was like, okay, this will do it if I tell him. So I was sad about it, but then I was like, this is for the best, because at the same time, I also still had to do the work, which I started to do when I first met you. But I feel like I want to ask you, so this was a question from someone else that they asked me. They said, what was it like telling Dan and his reaction? So for me, it was scary. I was fear of the unknown. Is he not going to want to talk to me again? Because I've had relationships where I've said this and it ended like that. I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel protected. I remember telling him and feeling so safe. And he always made me feel like that. Even when we first met, I just felt so calm and peaceful. And I've always felt like that with you. But I want to ask, from someone else said, was he scared when you told him? Did he consider leaving? And does he sometimes overthink your symptoms?
I wasn't, when you told me, like I said, I actually was thinking, finally, you know, she's actually kind of being real with me. So I wasn't necessarily scared at first. And if I'm completely honest, I didn't necessarily know, fully what that would mean as far as, living with bipolar. What was the last part of that question?
Does he overthink your symptoms?
Oh, I don't think I do.
I think sometimes when you first met me, you didn't understand it. I would be like, oh, this person doesn't like me. Or I would get really paranoid and have these thought spirals where I think I did something wrong, or I think I said something like mean or hurtful. And I would just go down this rabbit hole of these people don't like me or want me around. And you would never understand that.
Agree with that. It has been a learning experience for me. And kind of understanding, what you're going through and what you're thinking about. And thinking back when we first started living together at Montreux, there was a period of time where you weren't sleeping. You were lashing out at people. And at the time, again, I didn't equate that to any kind of symptoms, but looking back, I think that was probably the first time that I've seen you in more of a manic state. But initially, my initial thoughts on when we first started dating and you told me that you were living with bipolar, I don't think I completely knew what I was necessarily getting into.
Well, I think something else is, did you know anyone before meeting me who was living with bipolar? Or was I the first one that you met?
Now, you're the first person that I met that actually had a diagnosis of bipolar. I have a person in my that is in my family that I suspect may have bipolar disorder, but I don't think she was ever diagnosed.
And then what do you think is the hardest part for me living with bipolar for me? Someone asked.
I think that it's kind of separating out the person from the disease, if you will. So, excuse me. So what I mean by that is, there'll be times where you will tell me like, am I feeling sad just because, that's a normal, emotion to have, or is this a part of my diagnosis, or, am I mad at somebody, or fear of maybe even telling somebody that you're mad at them because you don't want to be looked at as the crazy bipolar person, or you don't even validate the emotion that you're mad because you think, is this just my, is this just a condition of my, bipolar disorder? So that's my thoughts, is that, that would be a struggle, and that's kind of a struggle I see.
Okay, so separating what's me, my personality versus bipolar. And I think that, so you started to see that a lot, like you said, when we started living together, because before then I was living in my apartment that I lived in by myself. I moved into, you helped me move into, you were living in a house with your friends, and then we ended up moving in together. And I think this is important because it was at the start of the pandemic. So this was actually right before COVID came out. It was like a month before. Like,
yeah, all we of moved this in was right all of it. Before COVID.
So life was normal. We were like, oh, this is great. We're going to live in this amazing, beautiful. It was like such a nice apartment. Had the most, honestly, out of every pool we've seen.
Beautiful pool.
The best pool ever. And we moved in. We were super excited. And then all of a sudden, everything, you know,
shut
changed.
Down. The whole world
and
shut
then
down.
Something that was hard was, like Dan was mentioning, seeing me not sleeping, lashing out, all of these things like that. So I wanted to ask you, when we did move in together, what was your first experience like when you were seeing the manic behavior living at Montreux, and what did you think contributed to that? Because I think I know, but I want to hear what you think.
Well, what was it like? Well, first, I didn't quite know what to think, right? I didn't know what was kind of happening. I just was like seeing you in this different state, if you will. And I kept saying, why aren't you sleeping? And, you know, and then I would see you kind of lash out at people. You weren't necessarily lashing out at me. It was other people. And then I would, yeah. And then
the
I would tell you that I don't think that that's, you know, good. And then you would get mad at me for not backing you up. And so that was kind of a hard time, to be honest. We did get through it. I think that what contributed to it, though, was alcohol. Mm-hmm. You know, at that time, there was nothing to do, and we would watch.
Well, also routine, because I got fired. I quit different jobs. I started to feel really bad.
That's true. You
I felt like,
fired.
Honestly, I felt like a failure, because I would see you and I would see how stable you were. And I was like, how do people just stay so long in successful careers? So for you guys who don't know, Dan works in finance, and I remember meeting him, and it was actually funny. Like, on one of our earlier dates, he helped me get a referral to interview for the company that he worked at. And I remember, weren't you laughing? Cause you're like, there's no way that you would ever like this or anything.
Yeah. I think that you wanted to go there just because the earnings would have been nice. Right. You'd have made more money, but I don't think you would have enjoyed
and I think
the work.
I wanted to make you proud. Cause I remember something from me when I was hospitalized, and when I went back and I worked at that same hospital, something I would always hear about that was really made me sad is a lot of staff talking about people coming into the clinics or hospitals for their appointments. And it was always this thing that I would hear reoccurring of people with bipolar, job stability, they're never going to be successful, they're never going to make six figures or whatever this is. And I was like, I just want to prove everyone wrong and be able to do this and show that I can do it. And I think that this would make people proud of me. And I was always chasing external validation. It was never for myself. So I feel like that was part of the problem. Definitely the drinking, because it was a lot of drinking. It was like 4 to 5 times a week.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was, even I was drinking too much. I mean, there was nothing to do at the time, and so we would just drink. But so I definitely think that that was a large contributor to it. I don't remember if you got off your medication at that time.
I did later. I did later, but this time I stopped taking the nighttime one because we were drinking so much that I only took the daytime one. But I also wasn't keeping track of it either. So I would think, I'm like, oh, I took it, you know, a couple times this week. I don't really know. But the problem was the sleep. So my routine was completely knocked off. I didn't have anything that I was doing with my time. So this was, again, prior to me launching the podcast, writing my book.
I think you had launched it right around that time.
I think I started it right, February of 2020.
Yeah.
So I just started it. It was like new, very, very new.
Yeah.
And I think that was also a trigger, because remember the people that we had as friends around us who weren't really good friends. And I remember I was like sending the podcast to everyone. And I literally had people be like, I don't even listen to podcasts. I don't care about this. Stop sending it to me. But I had all the friends that I had at that time were people that I knew from earlier in my life who knew me as the party girl, like going out, drinking. And that's really my personality. So it was like, I didn't have anyone around me who was working on themselves, who was into learning about bipolar disorder. I didn't know anyone else who had lived with bipolar disorder or was living with the diagnosis or had experiences. Because when I first launched my podcast, it wasn't focused on bipolar disorder. It was overall all about mental health, but it was very, very new, like a month into doing that. So I want to ask you again. So what, someone else asked this question. So when he first told his family, so we can start with that before we get into the other parts, but do you remember when you first told, whether it was your mom or your sister, your brother, like what was their reaction, or were you nervous to tell them?
No, I wasn't nervous. I think I told my mom pretty early on in our relationship, maybe fairly early on after you had told me. She didn't have a bad reaction. I wasn't nervous. My mom's a caring person, so I didn't think she
was just here.
Yeah, she was just here. We showed her some videos of our travels.
Honeymoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wasn't afraid to tell her. I don't recall when I told other people in my family, but again, I wasn't concerned about that. I will say I probably had some apprehension early on about telling other people,
like who, your friends,
like people at work. Yeah. Not what? Necessarily. It comes back to the kind of the stigma, right? Like I know how my family's going to react because they're just caring people. I know how most of my friends are going to react to it because, again, most of my friends are good people.
Most of them are good people, not all of them.
Most of them are good people. So I'm not concerned about, you know, what they think or say, in that regards, cause they're not going to care. But when it comes to, you know, people at work, I don't necessarily know what their reaction is going to be. And so I think I was a little bit more guarded with that, but at this point I'm not, I don't have a problem. I tell people all the time, and honestly, like too, I'm proud of the work that you do in this space, and it all goes back to that, right? So I share it all the time.
Well, I think something else, because like when you first said you were nervous in the beginning, that makes me think of, just imagine how nervous people who actually have the diagnosis are.
Oh, I'm sure.
Taking that into work, because I feel like it's such a different thing when it's your friends, your family, but people you're working with.
There's so much stigma around it. And I think there's not a lot of knowledge. I think people have this idea, and I think this was my idea of bipolar as well. You know, early on or before I met you, is kind of this Hollywood idea. You know, picture that Anne Hathaway movie where one moment she's fine, the next moment she's crying, the next moment she's, you know, in bed and can't get out of bed. And then the next moment, you know, she's manic and running around the streets, you know? So, it's not that way. At least that has not been my experience with you. It has not been that way.
So another question someone asked is if and how he tells coworkers or new friends that he's married to someone with bipolar. Does it come up in conversation when he says you are an author and podcaster? What reactions has he faced?
Yeah, it definitely comes up. And it kind of goes back to that. I'm proud of the work that you do. And you've done a lot of work to try to destigmatize this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no apprehension of sharing.
Say you told someone at work?
Yeah, I just told someone. One of my coworkers had asked what you do, and I shared you're an author, podcaster. He asked what's the podcast about? And I shared, it's called Live Well Bipolar, and kind of shared a little bit of what it's about. And then he shared that his mom is living with bipolar. So, and you do find that there's a lot of people kind of tied to this
that know someone
or maybe work in that space. I met somebody playing golf fairly recently, and I shared with him what you do. And it turns out his wife works in a mental hospital. And so, it's just everyone.
Do you remember? Okay. So I don't want to say her name, but the lady who said that she wishes she knew me because her husband was bipolar and they got a divorce. But we don't need to say who it is, but she was saying that. We had like all of our stuff. But something else was during the pandemic too, I went back to school and got my MBA in healthcare administration. So I went, and I feel like that was also extra stress because I remember when I went through that period of losing jobs and I started to feel like such a failure. Like, why can't I just stay stable in a job? Remember that time I would call you crying because I quit? And it was like that one place where I would drive like 45 minutes and I would just be so emotional and I would take things so personal. And then I was like, well, I'm just going to go back to school and get my MBA in this. And I always felt like I needed to be doing something.
So that's another aspect that where I was talking about earlier, this kind of struggle of separating yourself from this person that's diagnosed with bipolar.
Because I blame myself, but you're saying it was the work environments that were...
Potentially, yeah, right? Like, I myself, and I think other people have gone through this with their career, have been in places where they have struggled in those places. I've gotten fired from a job, right? It's not, I struggled in that place that was the environment that was in culture in that company that I did not produce and I ended up getting fired. And so you have, and I hear you say this from time to time that you can't keep a job. And a lot of times you'll blame the diagnosis, but here I've seen you keep up with this podcast and it because it's something you're passionate about. And I've seen you have success in a different career as well with the tech industry. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because you actually enjoy aspects of that. And so to me, when I look back, I don't see a person that couldn't keep a job because they were struggling with their bipolar episodes. I see a person that was just trying to figure out their path in life, if you will.
Well, I remember that. I feel like even then when I was at that job for a year and a half and I ended up being the number one salesperson for that whole quarter, whatever the award was or recognition. But I remember even then it wasn't enough. I kept feeling like I always had this drive to do more. And then again, I feel like I would blame myself every time something would happen where it's out of your control, whether it's sexual harassment or like inappropriate things and work environments. And then I would go out of places and then find
something. I think that was triggering. And so, you know, there might be some aspects on how you dealt with that maybe were because or a condition of you dealing with or living with bipolar. But I don't think that, you know, those aspects were not your fault, right? But I would say that you probably handled them differently than maybe I would, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that that you don't have the capacity to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think something else is, remember when you said I went off my medication? So this is the only time I actually ever went off my medication for a long extended period of time. So it was 3 months. And this is when we went to Hawaii. When was that, 2021? Or 2020.
I think it was 2021. Yeah.
Cause it was before.
So we had moved in. So after Montreux, things got a lot better after we left. We actually didn't stay there for a very long time. This apartment complex. And things got a lot better when we went to Optima.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were around a lot more people that were probably good influences on, I would say, even both of us.
Yeah.
We were drinking a lot less. Mm-hmm. We probably got into a better, this is more towards the tail end of the pandemic. So we probably got more into better routines.
Our
and
meals
so forth.
Were better.
Our meals were better. We were eating better. So I think all of that helped. You had been doing a lot of work on yourself as well. You were working on your book.
Mm-hmm.
So things had gotten a lot better at that point. And then we went on this trip to Hawaii. And I think the issue was that you couldn't get your prescription refilled.
Oh,
so you just decided I'm not going to take the medication.
And it was 16 days that we were in Hawaii. So we did Maui and Kauai. But I think what happened is I told you about this. Remember I said, hey, I'm going to do this. But I said, I want you to tell me if you notice anything in me and I'll.
Yeah. So she didn't go off her medication just you know, on a kind of a whim or without
telling
me. And yeah, I do recall you asking me to.
And still, I wouldn't ever advise anyone to do what I did. I would definitely work with your doctor. Don't. I did it because, again, like I was, you said my medicine, or I couldn't get the medicine. I was also around a lot of people who were telling me too, you're doing so well. Like, remember how.
Yeah, that may have been, I think there were multiple factors of why. But I do recall that you had, there was some issue with filling your script that. That also probably, influenced it as well.
Because I was just getting my medicine from my family doctor. They just kept filling it. I didn't have a psychiatrist. I didn't have a therapist. None of this.
What ended up resulting, you were fine for a while. Nothing happened in Hawaii. It was after you'd come back. I think you were off medication for a few months.
3 months.
And all of a sudden you would just be really emotional and be crying.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of nowhere, and you would go on a walk and come back and you'd be crying. And I think at that point I told you that I am seeing a shift where you'd wake up and you would tell me you're feeling sad and things of those nature.
Well, yeah, because I feel like I've always been, so ever since my diagnosis, I was diagnosed 10 years ago with bipolar 1, but I was first diagnosed with depression at 16. So from 16, 17, 18, and then 19 is when I was diagnosed with bipolar 1. I've always had, it was all depression. And then ever since the diagnosis, it's always been so much more on the manic side. And that was just so much more what I experienced. And it was some periods of depression, but not really anything. So ever since that, it was 3 months of being off my medication, all of a sudden I started to notice, like I would be on a walk and I would just start crying. And it was like this thing that I just couldn't explain. I could not explain why out of nowhere I was so sad and so just feeling like nothing was good anymore. And it's so hard even now to think back to that. But I remember all of this was happening. So I was like, I'm going to go back on this medicine. And I can't even remember like how I did it. Cause I went to my doctor. I don't even know how I did it. I don't remember.
You must have gone to the doctor.
I don't know
and
what
they
I did.
Refilled the prescription and you went back on the medication, and that seemed to have kind of resolved some of those.
So someone
incidences.
Asked, where should a partner or close family and friends start who want to support and understand bipolar?
I did some reading online. But most, I would say the majority of what I have learned has been from you and also, I guess, talking to your family as well, and kind of hearing some of your past episodes and so forth. But really, you have taught me a lot, and you've been very open with me about a lot. And so I think that has really helped me. I would say, you know, start there. I think the communication is a big key.
Mm-hmm.
Open communication, and one thing that I think at this point, you know, I've now seen you in various states, so I can kind of recognize it, but also you're very open with me on how you're feeling, and that helps me as well. I guess this communication. Yeah.
Okay.
Communication, and you can do your own research. I did my own research, just kind of looking up articles online.
Well,
I did read your book. Yeah.
And it's funny because he always says this, he is not a reader.
I'm not.
Yeah. So I know.
I'm a pretty slow reader.
And it was funny because I remember that was one of my favorite memories besides our wedding, is my book launch party and the speech that you gave and just seeing your reaction. Cause you were actually the one who encouraged me to start my podcast in the first place. And if it wasn't for the podcast, I would have never written my book and published my book, because everything starts with something. So the conversations from the guests on my podcast are what inspired me to finish my book, publish that, then start speaking publicly about my story for different organizations, NAMI, different schools. And I think something else was the biggest part was you in telling me that it's worth pursuing this, it's worth sharing this. So I feel like if it wasn't for our relationship, I feel like I eventually maybe would have done some of this stuff, but I had such bad relationships where I did not feel safe or supported. So that kept me silent for so long. So I wanted to see, because you were talking about this. So I had launched the podcast, writing the book. So what are some ways you support your partner's bipolar was a question.
Or the ways I support it?
Yeah.
I think I listen to you, right? I try to, when you're telling me that you're feeling sad, I try to lift you up. I try to share with you when I see, maybe when I'm not sure of how you're acting or what your behavior is, if it has something to do with an episode or something. But I'm just supportive of you as a person. I don't really know. What ways do you think I support you?
By asking me questions and you tell me when you notice things in me that I probably don't notice in myself all the time.
Yeah. I think communication is a big key of it, right? I can tell you patience and communication are, I think, the two biggest things for me that keeps this kind of going. I'm a fairly patient person, but I have had to exercise a lot of patience, I think, in our relationship, but I'm willing to do that, right, for the person that I love. So that's kind of the key.
I love you, and I do the same. But I wanted to ask you, okay, so I remember you were saying that there's certain ways that you're impressed with me, and I think this is important to talk about because you've known me pretty much through all my 20s. So we met when I was 23. Like, I just turned 23 and now I'm going to be 29. So I guess, like, when you were mentioning to me, you said, I've been impressed with seeing certain things of how you changed. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, when I first met you, I saw you as a guarded kind of person. I would say that you at first were also a little cold, maybe.
Yeah.
It would be the way I would describe it. And you got a big heart, open heart. You're not nearly as guarded now. You're very open, in fact. You're sharing a lot with the world. So extremely open. I think you've also started to recognize things in yourself. So maybe behaviors that were not serving you well, you've tried to get rid of, and behaviors that are serving you well, you've tried to maybe enhance or continue to operate on.
Well, I feel like you helped me because your opinion, like, I would ask you about, so I feel like it's setting boundaries. So, like, I got rid of so many people who were, I thought were friends of mine, which really they weren't good people. Because when I started changing, I wasn't going out all the time. I wasn't partying all the time. I wasn't drinking all the time. I was wanting to do more things focused on the podcast and learning more about bipolar and all this
stuff.
You've
read a ton of books too. I mean, my goodness, she reads all the time. That's actually really impressive. You read a lot of books.
Yeah, like 40 a year or 30 or something. I had like a list
30
of
30 or 40 a year.
But yeah. I feel like that was what I used to do, that I started getting back to things that I loved. So I think that was something, but also I feel like you helped me because I would, especially with my relationship with alcohol. So changing that, but you also helped me realize that I was being really hard on myself with that.
Very hard on herself. This is something she's always been like
with
this.
Everything.
And yeah. And so, like, that's something that I'm always kind of trying to get her to back off of, if you will, like, like, give yourself some grace. You don't have to be so hard on yourself.
Because you would tell me, you're like, look, you don't have an actual issue with alcohol. Because I cut out. I was like, I just want to drink less. And I was training for the 10K marathons. And I didn't drink for like a couple months. And then I remember it was Thanksgiving and I had a glass of wine. And I literally was like, I feel like such a fraud because I'm not sober. I keep saying I want to be sober.
But you are. And that's the thing. So she has started living this sober lifestyle, but just because you have one drink doesn't mean you're not sober, right? You're still living a sober lifestyle. You had one drink at a celebratory, you know, event thing. So it's not like a It's like a special
occasion. Well,
Anne
Milan's
thing,
birthday.
Right?
We took her to her birthday dinner recently. And I had a drink and then I had like two cocktails on New Year's Eve. But I feel like I am always like that. And I think that that's part of it is like, I'm hard on myself with everything. I feel like it's always trying to prove myself for making these changes, but he always helps me realize the progress I've made and like how far I've actually come with it and why I'm doing what I'm doing in the first place. So I feel like now I don't hold on to that anymore of, oh, if I drink a few times a year, you're not a complete failure. Why are you doing what you're doing anyway? So I feel like that goes into something else in our relationship, which is the big milestones that we've had. So we got engaged on February 10th of 2022, which is funny because it was actually 2 weeks ago today, 2 years ago. So talk to me about, when did you know that you wanted to propose or marry me? And how did me sharing about bipolar factor into that? If it did.
I don't know that it did at that point, right? Like, you know, by the time I proposed, I pretty much knew what I was getting myself into. You know,
Yeah.
Well, we've been together over five and a half years. So I think we were 3 years in at that time, mm-hmm. and I'd seen you in a lot of different ways. I'd seen a lot of the growth that you'd had. So I would say it was kind of like an evolution, right? I watched you grow up in a way, mm-hmm. and turn into this beautiful person.
Aww.
And I also had to kind of release some of my own issues, I think, around marriage, I guess. And I say this not saying that I was afraid of getting married. I'd always wanted to get married, but I am fearful of divorce.
Your parents.
Right. I'm fearful of divorce because my parents were divorced. And so I had to kind of release some of that, I would say. But I knew that we were going to get married probably 2 years in anyway. It was just more a matter of time and when the time was right. But no, I don't think that living with bipolar, that didn't really factor in at that point.
Someone else asked this question is, how do you think that we make each other better?
I think I ground you. and I think you make me take chances.
Yeah. You said, I help you believe in yourself and see that you can do things that you didn't think you could.
You have changed my perception of things in a way, in a good way, more entrepreneurial kind of spirit, I would say, maybe a little bit more of a risk taker.
yeah.
You know,
well,
and I'm more of reserved, more of a, you know, probably a grounding aspect for you.
One of the things we talk about, so there's bad triggers, like we talked about, and then there's good triggers, like our wedding. So I know we did a lot last year. So it was like the wedding, we bought a house that whole entire year. So
got
I went
married
through,
in March, bought a house in April, left in May for our honeymoon.
Through
right?
June.
May or June? No,
May,
yeah, we left
and
in
June.
May. Yeah.
And then I started the new job in July.
So 3 months in a row were big.
Big, huge life events.
Yeah.
Like right after the other. I know you talk about some of the concerns that you had with the honeymoon, with going out of the country, with all of this, with the wedding planning. Was there anything that you were like, oh, I'm kind of worried?
No. Well, we had help with the wedding planning. And I think that was, I do think that if we did not hire a wedding
Sandy.
Planner. Yeah, she was amazing.
Love Sandy.
If we did not hire her, I do think that may have been something that could have overwhelmed you. And so I am glad that we did that. But I did have a concern about traveling overseas. And it was, you know, how is the routine aspect going to impact you? How is the time change going to impact you? Because that can impact your circadian rhythm. That kind of stuff. So is that going to be any kind of triggering thing?
And it wasn't.
It did not impact you at all. Actually, you probably handled the time
did
change
better than
I did.
Yeah.
In reality. But then also, you know, if something did happen, we're over in Italy and what the heck do you do? You know what I mean?
Well, I think something else that helps me with you is I talk about this in the episode last week. So my own solo episode talking about the lessons I've learned from 1 year of marriage is how travel with you has helped me grow, I would say, because we've gone to a lot of places. I mean, we have our whole map over there with all the like holes and everything that we've gone to. But I feel like sharing all these experiences with someone and being able to try new food, see new cultures together, I feel like that is something that I never thought that I would be able to do with someone. But I think something else that was a question for you was, we talked about starting a family in the future and our fears around that. So I know there's some things that I'm afraid of that I've told you, and I wanted to see if you have any fears or concerns with that.
Well, I think you're going to be a great mother. You know, I see you with little tykes all the time.
Love them.
Youngsters.
Little tykes.
You're very good with kids. Yeah, I would say that there are concerns, but I don't think it's anything we can't work through.
The pregnancy.
I'm
going off of medicine.
You know, going off your medication, just because I've seen the impact that it's had in the past. So you add hormone changes when you're pregnant as well. So how is that going to impact you? Again, I think this is things that we can work through. But then also, how much of it is going to be on me, considering I know that your sleep schedule is important as well in terms of managing. And with a little
twins.
Little one.
We could have twins.
Oh gosh, I
want twins so bad.
I do not want twins. She really wants twins. I would prefer one at a
time.
I've
had four dreams with two little girls, the same like
they would
hair
be really
me.
Cute. It would be really cute.
And I have the names already.
One at a time.
Everyone knows what's our name. What's the name for the girl?
But Sophia.
I've had Sophia picked out for the like over 10 years. Sophia. Yes. Amelia, and Oliver.
It's in our wedding vows. I put it in the wedding vows.
Oh, yeah, you did.
We will name our daughter Sophia.
Sophia.
But the impact of just sleepless nights a lot of times. And so, you know, how much is that going to rest on my shoulders if you know, there are issues? But I don't know. Again, these are more concerns, nothing we can't work through.
Well, I think I ask these questions to people I know who, whether they're a father or a mother living with bipolar and they have kids, they've helped me a lot with what their experiences were. I know there's people who say, I didn't get my bipolar diagnosis until after I had my kids or before, but I feel like hearing from people, that's literally what I've done with this whole podcast, is seeing what actually works for people in being able to get to a point where you even think you can live well bipolar, and what are you doing to be able to do that?
And I think that is the beauty of what you do.
Thanks.
With the podcast, right? The beauty of it is that, and you see it, you're seeing other people's stories. And to me, that is relieving, because it's like, hey, if they can do it, we can do it too, you know? So.
Well, I think something else is, yeah, we've done, I feel like, so much in our relationship. So from the very first time we first met, and I remember I didn't think you liked me. You thought I was weird, all over the place. And then I finally told you about my history, my hospitalization, going back working there, and just how much pain that has caused me, and like how I've overcome so much, being able to, you've seen me go through all the problems that I dealt with my relationship with my mom, being able to be in such a good place with her now, where we talk all the time. She was just over here last night, where that was a really, really big struggle for me of not having that relationship. And it was very hard on me. And I remember you saw me through that. You saw me through navigating a lot of the issues that came back up with the sexual trauma, going through that. So I remember opening up to you and telling you about what happened, how that impacted me, and just how that would show up later in ways that I really didn't expect. So I feel like you've actually helped me see that all the ways that I used to invalidate that, I would invalidate the trauma. I would tell myself, oh, it could have been worse. I could have been killed. And I didn't really give myself the opportunity to work through it. And I went back to therapy. And even when, remember you saw me through when that started to come back up, I think it was like 2 years ago or whenever it was. Like a year and a half. I don't know. Yeah. Wasn't it like right after our wedding? Yeah. The month after we got married, I remember I was crying a lot at night and couldn't eat and all this stuff because something reminded me of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you saw all of that, but I think it's just the communication piece and being able to tell him not only when I feel like, oh, I'm doing really well, or this is what helps, but this is what I look like when I'm not. And then, I mean, I do it all the time. Like, I'll tell him, hey, I woke up and I was really, really sad. I don't know why. This is how I feel. But I think I want to ask you this last question. So what is next for your relationship?
Well, we've got a lot ahead, right? So we've got some trips coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We've got our 1 year anniversary
in a week.
Well, when this podcast comes out, I guess it'll be our anniversary.
Yeah.
So 1 year married. We've got some trips that we've got planned this year. We've got some more trips we'd like to do next year. So a lot of travel. Mm-hmm. And then starting a family.
Yeah.
We want to do that.
And we don't know when. I feel like there's people who ask me that when I stop drinking as much. Oh, are you pregnant? All this stuff. But
we keep going back and forth of like a year from now, maybe 2 years from now. So it'll be within the next couple of years.
We literally keep saying, oh, even now. So we don't really, we keep saying that.
Yeah.
We keep going back and forth.
If it happens now, we're good with
that.
We'll
have kids now.
We do want to try to do some things before then.
Yeah. And I'll answer this question for you and you can answer this one for me. But what is the one thing that you love the most about me?
That's a good one.
Oh, I came up with it myself. Actually, I threw that one in there. It wasn't asked from anyone. I just want to hear what you said.
I think it's, well, there's, it's hard to pinpoint one, right?
We'll say them all and then pick one.
All right.
You can say them all and then say this.
I would say the top one I think is your personality.
Oh,
you make me laugh all the time, which is great. I like to laugh.
Little giggler.
Yeah.
Dan Noodle. Do you like my nicknames for you?
She's got all kinds of nicknames. Your drive and your passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I love seeing you do this. I love seeing you do what you're passionate about and you're driven to do it. We talk about not being able to hold down a job. Well, when you're passionate about something, you've stayed dedicated to it. You've been doing this for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome.
Okay. So I want to say the one thing I love about you the most is I know I have so many things and I always write each other letters, and that's my love language is words of affirmation, and yours is
very much
acts of service and physical touch, spending time together. But I feel like what I love the most about you is how you were the one who helped me see the value in my life and in my story. And if it wasn't for you, I would have never started the podcast. I would have never finished and published my book and been speaking publicly about this, because you were the one I would always go back to whenever I was hesitating or I wasn't sure. And you were always the one who, you saw this in me before I saw it in myself. I remember we would go on dates early on and you always said that you're like, I saw something, but I feel like you were hiding it. You had this wall up, you didn't take it as seriously or whatever the case was. But I feel like the thing I love the most about you is how you always encourage me, support me, and have made me feel so safe ever since the day that I told you I was diagnosed. This is my hospitalization. I feel like we always, even when we have days where we are going through stress or overwhelm, I know I've been dealing with a lot this year with my grandma passing away, all the stomach issues, the multiple doctor's appointments. We finally have an answer to that and I'm feeling so much better, but I feel like there's been a lot. And then you had your wisdom teeth surgery. We've just had a lot of things back and forth, but I feel like what I love so much about you is how you do keep me grounded and just how real you are and how you aren't afraid to put me in my place. And you always do that. And I feel like a lot of people don't, they don't do that. You will literally tell me.
If I think she's being whack, I tell her she's being whack.
Okay. I'm being whack. You never use that word. It's just for the podcast. And remember, I've
never heard whack before.
I have heard of whack, but not from you. And I said, have you been rehearsing your podcast voice? Because remember when we first recorded, you were like, thanks for having me on the podcast. And you said, of course, I'll be on your podcast. But you were cute. You ran upstairs and got your nice little shirt on. You did your hair.
Gotta look good for the podcast.
Gotta look good for the podcast. Yeah. For the podcast. But I feel like this relationship was the foundation, because what we were saying earlier about having a family, that was always the number one thing I've always wanted to do and be in my life as a mother. I don't know why. That's always the number one thing if I could pick anything. And I feel like I really didn't think I was going to have that because I really was like, I don't want to be a mother if I'm not going to find someone. Cause I am super old fashioned. Like I want to be married. I want to have a life, build a future with someone. I don't want to just go have a kid and know that this person isn't going to show up because all the relationships I've been in previously, I would have people say that to me, like, I'll have a baby with you. And I was like, no, I want to actually be able to have someone who's going to show up and be the way that my dad is for me. Cause you know how much our relationship is and what a great person he is and how he's always been there for me.
Awesome.
Yeah. And my mom, how we've been able to have this relationship and talk all the time. And she's been so helpful for just being able to have all the conversations that I've been able to have with her over the years. But I think that's what I always come back to. So I guess the last question, well, that should have been the last question. We don't have any more left. If we're going to do more questions, we got to do another podcast because this is going to go to be too long. And you know, I don't like long podcasts. So I always try to keep this. It's not going to be 30 minutes. It's definitely an hour, but I guess any last final words before we hit end and shoot this little baby out into the world for our anniversary? What do you want to tell the people? What do you want the people to, the people to know?
If you haven't gotten the book, go get the book, Crooked Illness. Aww. It's amazing. Like, subscribe. I don't know what they say.
Like and subscribe. I love you. You're so cute.
I love you too, baby.
Okay, guys. And I love you too. So thank you for being here and showing up and wanting to hear our story. This has been my absolute favorite conversation with the person I was the most nervous to talk to. You should have seen me before this. I was so scared. And I took like minutes to even figure out how to introduce him. Because he's the one of the most important people to me. So I love you for being here and for showing up. And I am going to try to scoot over and end this podcast without falling off my chair. So love you guys. Bye.